live from Los Angeles. If he dies, he dies. It's time to speak some English with Andrew English.
You probably cannot see my pallor right now, so you may not recognize just how close to death I've been over the past couple days. I'm finally feeling like myself, but man, it's like Thanksgiving took everything out of me, and I really thought I was going down for the count. I've been in bed for days, but I'm back.
You should lay off the discount turkey.
I'm back, I think.
Just throwing it out there.
You know, sometimes the cheap stuff is the only way to go. That's all the shelters give out, man. What am I supposed to do? What am I supposed to do? But I think that something about seeing Thomas Vokoun go down gave me the will to push on.
I mean, so, don't you want to be on Keith Ballard's Christmas list right now?
I want to be on any team with anyone who will hit me in the head with a hug. That's what I'm going to say about that.
My favorite part is, and I've already put this on my Facebook quote, so sorry, Ken, because you've already read it, I bet, is that they're talking to the team afterwards, and one of the other defensemen, Brian Allen, is talking about how, you know, he didn't mean to. Keith didn't mean to. And he's like, you know, Keith feels awful about this. He feels 100 times worse. Nobody feels worse about this than Keith. And, you know, I just feel like it needs to be said that there is one person that feels a lot worse about what happened last night than Keith Ballard.
How is Thomas Vokoun, actually? I haven't read anything about this. How's he doing?
He's going to have some stitches, and he's going to meet the team in time to catch the flight back to Hotlanta.
I'm glad.
He'll be fine. Here's the thing. I'm a little bit offended because I had also read that on your Facebook page, but I did not get an apology. So...
You're not our listener.
Man,
I'm only apologizing.
I'm our host. The host, man. You gotta respect. You gotta give me my propers.
Your propers?
Aren't you supposed to have heard it already in rehearsal?
Yeah, dude.
Right.
The hours and hours we put in to make this podcast great.
Yeah. Andrew's already familiar with all of this information. He's just putting us on.
I forgot about that. I'm on a lot of Robitussin right now, so...
He's having
he's
a bit of a heart.
Forgotten about it.
You know, he's forgotten. But look here, we're not here to talk about Thomas Vokoun or Keith Ballard or Clint Malarchuk or Thanksgiving. We're here to talk about soccer, people, and maybe you guys should start talking, because I have no idea what the hell is going on right now.
Well, I'm actually sitting here admiring the table and taking a look at how Burnley and Blackburn and Wigan are all tied in points at 17 for 12th.
That's hugely significant.
I'm really fascinated by that.
You know what I'm fascinated? Oh, we're going to talk about it. Okay. I thought you were segueing in to talk about something else.
Did you want to talk about something else, Buzz? Because it seems like you've got something on your mind. And
I just want to talk about Ireland, man.
You're right. You know, that's a real topic. Are there
a bunch of freaking whiny crybabies?
All of those annoying people on St. Patrick's Day that suddenly pretend that they're Irish because they have a second cousin that might have talked funny or been drunk once. It started off and I really sympathized with them. And I actually at one point thought that they really had a case to make in regards to a replay. But I feel like the ship has sailed and this whole, like, let us be the 33rd team in the World Cup is just – That's pathetic.
But the way I feel about it is that every single year, I feel like in the NBA playoffs or in bowl season especially, you get a team who got kind of fucked by the ref, and they complain about it, but nobody ever actually gets a replay. Like, I don't care how egregious it is. You don't actually get a replay. You can
but the only
about
difference
it all you
is,
want is that those, they play a sport, and they all accept to play a sport that's archaic and refuses to come into the modern world and have video replays and all that bullshit. So they deal with shit like this, and that's just part of the game.
And I think that's the key.
Yeah,
like it is asinine to not have review in soccer.
I mean, they just proven the NFL, all of American sports, and especially the, I think even college football now, proves that you do it. And it's quick, and you just have guys watching all the time. This decision takes 20 seconds if you have, like, the right cameras, and you just move it around really quickly, and you have the equipment, and then you can rewind it step by step. You, like, look at it, you're like, oh, handball, all right. That took 30 seconds.
Here's
well,
what I'll say
about
the situation. Look, Step Blatter, the president of FIFA, he takes tons of shit from absolutely everybody in the footballing world, and deservedly so. And he should be taking shit in this situation, but right now he's taking shit from the Football Association of Ireland because he rejected and publicly outed their bid to become the 33rd team in the World Cup. That's bullshit. He did the right thing there. That was just a stupid,
that was
asinine request on their part.
No, you're right.
What Step Blatter should be taking shit for right now is the fact that he has repeatedly buried any attempts to interject replay into the game. And he has even gone so far as to dump money into developing replay technology and developing goal line technology and all of this stuff that could improve the game, that would improve the game, and that would prevent things like this from happening in the future, and then pulling the plug at the last second. That is what Sepp Blatter should be taking shit for right now.
Yeah. Well, it's the pace of soccer. You can't argue that. I will accept, you know, there have been some extreme replays in the NFL, and you know, you can't make the case and have any credibility to me that adding replay to soccer would seriously cut down the would slow down the game.
No, there's plenty of delay already, and it's not like there's any complex, weird decisions like you might have in a football
you
game
do,
with, like, multiple fumbles and, like...
You do two things. You allow replay for two things, every goal and every penalty kick. And that is it. The only time that replay is acceptable in soccer is if it's a PK or it's a goal.
Well, here's another... I think right here, the rule is to allow every single close offside, and you have a guy up in a booth looking at it who makes, like, a 10-second decision on whether or not it's legal, and you let him play it out, and then you call it, and you know it. And then, because one of the things that I think kind of kills soccer to a degree is that you have brilliant strikers who can be perfect and beat the trap who get blown on whistles constantly. And I just, there's nothing that deflates the game more than a brilliant goal being disallowed for offside, and it's not
well, you don't have to,
decision.
You don't even have to go that far, Carl. If you allow replay for a goal, that goes away because the linesman is no longer terrified. Like I guarantee you that those out of shape middle aged linesmen that are watching a bunch of world class athletes sprint up and down the field, the one thing going through their head is, oh God, don't let me screw up a goal. Please don't let me screw up a goal. And if you add replay for every goal, then that takes – they will let more stuff go. They'll let the borderline call go because they know, hey, if I blow this, somebody's got my back.
No, and that's – you're right. I mean, that's true.
And the only things – the two things that I really feel like are hugely wrong with soccer is one is the replay on goals. Just because there are too many goals that get waved off either, you know, incorrectly or don't get allowed incorrectly because of nitpicky offsides, nitpicky fouls, you know, phantom calls, things like that. And I think that's a problem. Then the other is the old argument that penalties are just they are the least correctly called thing in all of soccer, I would say. Because
yes,
referees are either too tentative to call anything or they're almost, you know, gleeful in calling everything.
And if you can use replay, then you could call almost every single one, and then you
can
look at it.
For players to sit there and haggle with the referee over a penalty call anyways, in that amount of time, you can determine whether or not the penalty call is legit.
Oh, yeah.
You can have it all laid out, and then you don't have a disagreement after the fact. Then players are still going to be pissed off, but ultimately everybody's happy because everybody's getting a fair shake, and that's what it should all be about.
Yeah,
well, you know what they need.
There's no complex decisions. I mean, because I'm going to reiterate that. There's no complex decisions in soccer that need to be made. There's no weird rule books with sub-rules, and, you know, like the NFL has. I mean,
the tuck rule?
Yeah,
there's not a soccer equivalent of the tuck rule.
There's not a whole lot of debate. I mean, it's either he is or he isn't. Pretty easy almost all the time. It's not
I think that's why the that's why bad calls in soccer are so inflammatory, because there is no – it's not a – you know, yes, you could conceivably wind up in a situation where you're saying, you know, the whole was the player active or inactive in the play offsides. You could – you know, that could get dicey.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, A, if you have a replay, that doesn't matter anymore. But But that's the most complex decision you will ever get is, was the striker 6 yards away from the goalie on the far side active?
Yeah.
Or was he inactive? Yeah. And it doesn't – there's nothing else. But you know what they need? Just going back to talking – there are two things that it's idiotic that soccer doesn't have. One, they need to have like a they need to have a not penalty option. You know, like the fact that the, a foul in the box has to be a penalty is way too it's way too draconian.
You're right.
It has the result of limiting creativity in the box. They need to have a rule where, you know, if it's a foul in the box but it's not a goal scoring opportunity, maybe you get a 20-yard free kick dead center. Or something like that. They need a middle ground so that the defenders are discouraged from fouls away from the play because something's going to get called. Because, you know, a little jersey tug isn't necessarily going to get called just because it's in the box. Whereas
I think that's actually not a bad idea. I mean, I think at this point
– actually not a bad idea.
Wow. Well, you know what?
You're a dick.
I understand that years of my knowing you have sort of tempered my expectations.
I'm giving you a Christmas present out of the Keith Ballard gift night.
Oh, I figured you were just going to take it out of Sully's mouth.
No, his mouth is full of tampons.
Seriously, though, I think that that's actually a good idea, and if by some miracle this could be implemented, which it never will, but if it could be implemented so that effectively, if it is not a clear-cut scoring opportunity, you get an indirect free kick from that point.
If you're a defender, you're gonna have a handful of jersey because odds are it's not gonna be a clear cut scoring chance, and so odds are the referee isn't going to be sufficiently freaked out to call it.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And I don't know. I just boy.
And you know what else I think that soccer should do that really bugs me?
What's that?
What the fuck is up with stoppage time? Like, go join the – I feel like just like they're being archaic by not having instant replay, they're being even more archaic by doing this stupid added time bullshit. Okay. It's like, they keep box scores on stone tablets?
I'm going to agree with you, but I'm never going to admit that again because I never want to see them blow the whistle because blowing the whistle leads to mid-period commercials.
Yeah. You're right.
And you never
right.
want that. You want the clock to keep running because you want no commercials. I don't care if it's archaic. It keeps the commercials away.
But, I mean, there aren't going to be a ton of commercial-long stoppages.
I don't care. It's commercials. I don't care.
I just get sick of the soccer. I feel like the most damaging thing to soccer is soccer's acceptance in America are soccer players. Because the way – and I'm not saying that – like, I feel like an NFL player would be equally whiny if the clock kept running and he could gain an advantage from – you know, I'm not saying that a soccer player is less of a man than another professional. You know, that's crap. But the way that soccer is set up, it encourages you to dive and to complain and to do, like just the maximum number of unappealing traits are encouraged by soccer.
Well, I've always felt – that with diving, that there should be a panel that reviews every game and hands out fines after the game to everybody that dives.
And
don't try to catch it during the game. Just fine them afterwards. Punish them afterwards.
It absolutely should be punitive.
Yeah, I mean, just because it's not really that big of a deal. You know, like, and if you start to punish people or suspend people for games or, like, do, like, an every four dives you get a game suspension, people are going to stop doing it because it's just not going to be worth it.
I feel like it's difficult. I don't know how you can, you know, I guess a panel would work, but there's always going to be ambiguity. You know, the player's always going to claim he didn't dive. I think you would do a world of good by the NHL does, and diving is still a problem, but it's not as big a problem. The NHL just publishes a list, and they don't fine unless it's, you know, if it's egregious, they'll step in. But their main deterrent is all of the refs and all of the teams get a list every month or so of divers.
I wouldn't be surprised if something like – well, actually, I would be surprised knowing England if something like
well,
that.
Well, because – and here's my thought on that. Referees are overwhelmed because the game is too – They're just not capable of following 12 guys across the 200-yard pit. You know, the soccer referee is overwhelmed.
Yeah.
So if you start really, even without fines, but if you really just start calling out the guys that dive and how often they dive, I think you're going to get into a situation where the poor panicked ref is going to be too scared to call a penalty when a certain guy is involved because that guy dives so much.
That's a shot.
I mean, honestly, I don't have that much of a problem with diving. I know that it's cheap. I know that it's obviously a way to cheat your way through a game into penalties and free kicks, whatever. I think it's something that just has to be accepted as part of the game. I don't think that either of the things that y'all have suggested are bad ideas. I just think that they're going to be very difficult to both implement and to police. And I think as it stands right now, there's enough negativity attached to the act of diving that when it becomes public, somebody like Devin and Go, who had the supposedly horrendous dive not too long ago.
I love how you worked the supposedly in there. No, allegedly. Allegedly.
What if it was a terrible dive? Wait, sorry, go ahead, Carl.
The problem I have with diving is that it just makes the game. I don't mind the spirit of diving. I think that the players should all cheat as much as they can get away with in order to win the game.
Pissed if my favorite player is.
But I just think it makes the game uglier. And yeah. I think that there's. I also hold that there's a difference between going down easy and, like, actually diving. And I think actually diving is policeable, that you can watch on the video, and if he never gets touched and he goes down and he holds something, that's a dive. But if he's, like, you know, he's getting nudged around and he goes down, I'm willing to, even if it looks easy, that's fine. But I just want to get, like, the most blatant dives out of the game, because I just rather see those guys try and beat somebody on the dribble than dive.
Yeah. That's totally acceptable. In the cases where it's completely egregious and there's no contact whatsoever, I would have no problem whatsoever with retroactive punishment for those people.
And guys who roll around on the ground and pretend to be hurt, just bullshit like that. Slap that guy with a fine.
And that's why I'm saying you get rid of stoppage time, because if the clock stops, then that guy, he has no reason to lie on the floor. But because of stoppage time, he's got every reason. The longer he lies on the floor, the longer it stays a tie game, or
In a world without commercials, I would agree with you 100%.
No, you're right, and I agree with you.
Untenable.
I will never advocate my own suggestion after you pointed out the commercial thing. So I will state I disagree with myself, but. Having said that I disagree with myself, I also think that there, you know, you have to admit that a part of the problem with soccer culture is the idea of stoppage time, because it is much – if I'm defending, I would much rather give you 6 minutes at the end of 90 minutes when everybody is exhausted than 6 minutes in the 15th minute when everybody is still trying their hardest and it looks like you might score.
Wait, here, you want to talk about archaic in soccer, really? It's the three substitution.
Oh, my God.
You can't come back on. Because that is why soccer players are hurt all the time. You know, if you can't just put somebody in for 45 minutes and test them out and take them off and see how they're doing, you're going to get people hurt all the time. You can't take risks on people. You can't test people. You can't see. And we might have brilliant players languishing on benches for years because they just never get a chance because there's just no way to give them a chance.
It wraps up the game, because I don't care how good of shape they are. Players clearly tire.
Yeah. Why not give us an entirely fresh set of legs in the last half hour? Let them really go at it. I mean, what's the problem with that? Why not let them adapt? Why not?
I feel that I like the idea of not being able to come back in. And I know that it's archaic, but I think that's one of the clever – I feel like that's one of the clever tactical spots about soccer. Like, that's one of the interesting managerial subplots to follow is, you know, who can make the other guy blink first and take off a forward? And then, you know, so I'm not gonna go as far as to say that I think that we should, you know, that they should let you start bringing guys back on. What I will say is, you bring seven guys to the game, you can put any one of those seven. You get seven substitutions. You can put anybody, you know, set whatever number of players you're allowed to bring into the game, you're allowed to put into the game.
Why not make it a whole 11 also?
The idea of the unused sub, to me, is idiotic. Like,
and I, from like a pure challenge perspective, you know, I see the appeal. But why are we hurting these guys? You know, like, why are we putting people on benches? Like, why are we forcing guys to, like, hobble through games? This isn't 1950. I mean, we know that these guys are assets, that to ruin their knee, to ruin them, is, like, a big deal. It doesn't just hurt them. It hurts the team. I mean, it hurts the league. It hurts the value of,
you know,
the whole establishment.
I'm actually going to argue with you, and I have a different approach. Sorry, Drew, did I cut you off? Or are you going to say something?
I was just going to say that your suggestion, Wes, basically kind of covers the basis that Carl has issues with. I mean, if teams can provide a bench full of subs with, you know, strong enough depth, then they're going to be able to bring on quality replacements and preserve the health and the integrity of their starting playing squad.
I do think, though, that you have to be careful or you're going to wind up into, as an avid hockey fan, one of the worst things about the NHL is the fact, is the presence of shitty players on every team. And there's a lot of, there. I feel like if you allow too many players to play, if you build out the rosters too much, then all of a sudden you wind up in situations where there are third liners out there. And third liners get people hurt because, you know, the idea of the George LaRocque type who can't really play his sport and doesn't really, you know, so I do agree that you should get more than three substitutions. I wouldn't go so far. I would be very happy if it was 5 to 7. And if you know, whatever, I think that you can bring seven guys to an EPL game now. I would be fine with you get seven guys, all seven can play, none of them can come back on.
Because yeah, no,
I never want to get to the position.
Fine. I think that's totally acceptable. That's a good compromise. But I think that because all I'm concerned about is just the league being able to preserve its players.
Yeah. But the trade-off of that is the more players you allow, the worse the average player gets. And there's a point to which that is good because all of a sudden you have a crappier defender and you get more scoring, and scoring is the point of everything. But you'll also, there's that happy medium where there are enough crappy players to make things interesting, but not enough really crappy players to screw up the game. But eventually you get to a point when there's just cement heads out there and their only job is to go out there and slide tackle. You know, and you've got a guy.
That would happen to a degree, but I think that.
But yeah, I'm not, and it's always going to happen. It probably happens now, but you just have to discourage it. And if you increase rosters by too much, you wind up so that I've got a guy on my team that I put out for the first 15 minutes to kick the other team's best player in the shins as hard as he can. I let him stay in for a yellow card. I let him stay in for as long after that as I'm willing to risk, and then I take him out.
And I think that you have to consider also, obviously, you know, they might adopt that approach, but the worst teams in any of the major leagues are always going to have a harder time dealing with the situation if they're having to worry about being able to bring on seven substitutes. I mean, a lot of these teams, like Burnley, for example, have a tough enough time fielding 11 players who are, you know, capable of starting in the Premiership, whereas Manchester United can field two full squads. And for instance, today in the Carling Cup, I guess it was, they played Tottenham, and it was effectively their entire reserve squad against Tottenham's starting lineup, and Man U's reserve squad still walked away with the win.
I'm sorry, Drew, I didn't mean to walk over you there, buddy.
No, it's just that there's not enough parity in the leagues at this point to make that a really viable option. I mean, I guess at some point tactical decisions by the manager, and do we want to make all of these substitutions or leave our best players on? But when you give one team with that much depth the ability to bring on effectively a full squad of fresh faces, everybody as good as their starting squad, and you've got another team leaving their bedraggled starters out there for 90 minutes, you're gonna cause problems.
I just feel like it's the way that the system is set up. I don't buy. And obviously you're not soccer making this argument. You're not soccer. But I just – parity is – there's no such thing. Soccer is not set up for parity, so I don't feel like maintaining parity should be a factor in any sort of decision. if soccer is always going to be about teams being able to spend more money, you know, teams being able to outspend each other, I think that you'll have just as you'll be in cases where a plucky squad of nine good players is going to be just as capable of winning the Premier League or competing at, you know, Everton is going to be just as competitive now as they would be if you're bringing in seven substitutes. Like,
I do entirely agree with that. I see completely where you're coming from, and I phrased that incorrectly, I guess. It's not about maintaining parity, because clearly there's none of that right now. It's about increasing disparity. And I feel like that's still a concern, not necessarily for the Evertons, the mid-table squads that can still field some solid backups, but when you're getting down to Hull City and, you know, I mean, at this point, you know, Wolves, Portsmouth, teams like that, it's going to cause some real issues. And the teams that are coming up from the championship are going to have a much, much harder time at that point.
Actually, I'm gonna disagree with you. I'm going to say that increasing the number of players allowed would make things easier for little teams, because it would allow
more chances to experiment. It would give them more chances to adapt.
It would drop the average price of a player, because there would be more players. It would allow you to have more specialists. You wouldn't all of a sudden have to worry about, can I get 11 guys that can make it through the whole game? All of a sudden you can break the game down and say, what if I send out these, you know, this unit of two for, you know, maybe it just gives you, I feel like
it gives you options to be clever, for a clever
yes.
manager to like utilize his resources in a way. Yeah, no, I would doubt if it would really rock the boat on parity either direction.
And that's, I guess, what I'm saying is it would definitely swing in favor of the big teams, because they would be the ones that could afford to have better subs. So, you know, chalk up one for disparity. But the trade-off is it would allow managers to, like you were saying, Carl, I think that it would give people a better chance to, you know, guys, I feel like sometimes guys get judged on their first three or four games with a team, and then they're done.
Mm-hmm.
And it would give managers a chance to buy a player and acclimate him more slowly. It would give them a chance of, you know, there are limited players out there that could probably do a lot of good if they didn't have to play 90 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
If they only had to play, you know, if there was a, you know, for lack of a better word, a defensive forward, you know, a guy who doesn't have, who doesn't bring a lot going forward, so he's not really playable now. But in a situation where, you know, it's important to get through the first 20 minutes of the game without conceding, or, you know, you can afford to have more niche players, you know, if you're away, you can afford to make a couple of substitutions in the 30th or 40th minute after you've had a mostly defensive lineup kind of take the crowd out of it, maybe.
Okay.
I think, like Carl said it the best, it gives people a chance to be creative.
Yeah, I guess right now the substitution policy is so limited that it gives no opportunity. I hadn't even thought about that aspect, really. But it really brings out the chance for coaches to actually plan out their matchups and plan out, like, little platoons and units and, you know, bringing out this for this. And, yeah, I hadn't even thought about the niche player aspect of it, Wes, but I think it really – that would even, like – it would transform the game intellectually.
And I think that we get to
better.
See – yeah. I mean, and I just think it would add more, you know, and because he's such a lightning rod, a guy like David Beckham, right, when, you know, Beckham is already well on the decline, but, you know, it gives him – imagine how interesting it would be if, you know, 2 years from now, he's still on the bench at Man U, and he obviously can't run anymore, and he obviously isn't nearly the effective force that he used to be, but you stash him as your seventh substitute, and then all of a sudden it's a close game late, it's a you have the threat of him, and it prevents the other team from fouling.
Well, yeah, because you could actually sub him in for a free kick.
Well, and or
conceivably, you could.
Yeah.
You could actually, if you had two subs left, or if it was only 5 minutes left and you didn't care that he couldn't run, you could sub him in for a free kick and take him out again.
Well,
if you
or this, to. Or you're protecting a lead. you've got seven subs. You've used a couple. You're protecting a lead. The other team's really, really pushing. You're trying to keep control of the ball. So you pull out one of your strikers and you put in Beckham, and all of a sudden, the other team has to be very, very careful about when they foul you. Because of the quality of his service. And he may not bring anything else. He does just enough not to get you killed, but he takes – there is the potential that his presence makes the other team play differently, because they know that if they commit a foul, it's all of a sudden a lot more intriguing that he's out there.
Okay.
Or if it doesn't work, you can just yank him for him for somebody that's actually useful.
I don't think it would really change the table right now, except that I think City would be above probably Liverpool and Villa. But I mean, I think the table would probably be the same otherwise.
Question: yeah, how do you think players would respond to this? I mean, I'm sure guys who are bench warmers now would appreciate getting more playing time. What would guys who are starters now and who might only be getting 45 or 50 minutes, how are they going
to
feel about it?
I think they were smart and they realized that it would allow them to prolong their careers significantly, they would get behind it. Because
how many of them do you think are thinking about that on a daily?
They're going to bitch, but not because it has nothing to do with playing time. It has nothing to do with career longevity. They're going to bitch because managers are going to use this as motivation to decelerate salaries.
No, that's very possibly true. No, but that means they have to be even more clever than if – no, they're not that clever. Players couldn't figure out that managers would do that.
Oh, I think that – but they'd figure it out when managers started doing it.
Well, but that, the rule would already be in effect and they'd be screwed.
You're right.
The rule – I mean, like, if they get pissed after the rule goes into effect, that's fine.
I mean, maybe I'm a cynic, but I don't think – I think that the prima donnas – the truly elite would still be playing most of the game anyway, so they're not going to care. You know, the Cristiano Ronaldos of the world are still going to be getting 70-plus minutes a game, so they're not going to care. And the people that would be impacted most are the people that are going to gain, that will be coming on and off the bench more. I don't think that anybody would care until they – except from the, well, if there are more spots, then salaries may go down. Aspect, but nobody's going to complain about the loss of playing time. They're going to complain outwardly in like press conferences and talk about how lament how manly the game used to be, but internally they're going to be all like, sweet, I can play 65 minutes now, and shopping, and
they're going to be able to be like way more, they're going to have more fun during the game, they're not going to get hurt as frequently.
I think you'll see more creativity. Because the players can afford to expend more energy, because in the back of their mind they're not thinking, well, crap, if we're tied in the 85th minute, I better have something left.
Yeah, okay. I don't think I'll be seeing any of this, because I don't foresee this happening at any point in the...
No. Seth Blatter should just listen to the old Speaking English podcast and learn the rules.
If only he was paying attention.
We'll email it.
That's what you should be getting lambasted for, not listening to our podcast. What kind
of... I feel like...
We solved all of his rule change problems.
We did. Week in, week out, we're solving your problems for you,
well,
Seth.
Why? Barack just got done telling the world what he was going to do in Afghanistan, and we immediately launched into telling Seth Blatter exactly what he should do with FIFA.
Wow.
We are like Barack.
Basically, soccer needs – Barack Obama needs to take over international soccer.
I think that's what we've established here.
Obama friend in now. But then his socialist tendencies would make all games one-to-one.
That's okay.
he would socialize the sport. And he would take our guns.
So anyway, to move this in a different direction, so do we think that Avram Grant can keep Portsmouth in the Premiership?
No. And I think Portsmouth, on a small scale, is a cautionary tale for all of the teams that have taken silly money. Because on a much smaller scale, what happened to Portsmouth is exactly what happened at Manchester City and Chelsea before them, in that they had a benefactor come in, throw a bunch of money, and then either lose it or get bored.
I don't actually think that Portsmouth is a bad squad. I could see them staying up. I think that Portsmouth actually has a pretty solid defense. They can't score goals at all, but I don't think that's necessarily for a lack of talent. I think if they can get some confidence instilled in their strikers, then they're going to be able to put the ball in the back of the net. I think that Grant is a good manager. I think that he got unfairly maligned while he was at Chelsea. He did some good things with that squad, and I could definitely see him keeping them up.
I guess I didn't really have an opinion when I asked that question, but having since looked at the table, I would like to agree with you, Andrew, but I don't see which other teams around them are really bad enough to, like, so that their Portsmouth's meager talent will allow them to rise above.
They're seven points from
West Ham, and West Ham and Everton are 16th and 17th, both of which I think are more talented than Portsmouth.
That's true.
And then the problem is the teams
that could plummet got enough of a head start.
Yeah, so it's like they have to wait. Burnley is only 10 points ahead. And Stoke is 13 points ahead.
Here's what I'll say. I think that you can look to a number of the mid-table teams right now and look to what happened to Hull last year. I think that Birmingham actually has a decent amount of talent. I think that Birmingham's going to stay roughly around mid-table just on the underside of it. I think that Burnley has had a good run of home form. I don't necessarily expect it to continue because I think that they're going to start to get some injuries piling up over the course of the latter half of the season. I think they're going to drop down the table pretty substantially, and their away form has just been abysmal. I think that Hull is going to continue to have issues. I'm not saying for sure. Portsmouth is one of the least five talented squads in the Premiership. I think that's safe to say. It's going to be a struggle. But I think that of those squads, they might have the best manager at this point. And I'm going to give Avram the benefit of the doubt and say that I think with 18 games left to go this season, he can just barely claw them out of the relegation zone.
All right, so then I guess because we're approaching the terminus point for me at least, what's your bottom three then, Drew?
I'm going to say Wolves go down. I think Hull is going to drop. I think Hull's going to wind up going down. And which they might not if they started playing Josie Altidore a little bit more. It's hard for me to look at where Burnley is right now and say that they're not going to survive, but
it's totally possible for them to fall.
They're only 1 point ahead of Hull.
It's totally possible. I'm going to say that either Burnley or even Wigan, only because Wigan has displayed such amazing inconsistency this season, might go down.
Okay, Carl. Sorry, Drew. Wrap up. I don't. What were your three? You yammered.
Wolves is going down. Hull is going down, and Burnley or Wigan is going down.
All right. So you're gonna puss out and give me four.
All right. I'm gonna.
Way to take a stand. You
weak, what I'm known for.
It's Wolves, Hull, and Burnley. Really, to be honest,
I think it's going to be Portsmouth, Wolves, and Hull.
I didn't think Portsmouth was going to stay up until I realized how close they are to Burnley.
Yeah, every couple of seconds you give a different answer.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's just I'm just thinking about
how
easy it is for a team like Burnley to just get a couple of wins early and then just, like, go on, like, a 2 or 3 month run, a winless run, and just plummet. And it's still so early that anything's possible. And so
here's what I will say to that.
Last season, at this point, Hull was still in the top seven teams in the Premiership.
Yep.
Last season, at the end of the season, Hull was in 17th, 1 point above safety. So,
you're right.
I think that it's highly possible that Burnley could fail to win another game for the rest of the season. I'm not saying that that will happen. I'm just saying that it could happen, and they have the least talented squad on paper of any team in the Premier League.
It's possible. I guess I just haven't seen, and maybe I haven't been watching those games, but part of that equation is looking at a team like Portsmouth and envisioning them going on a 3 or 4 match winning streak. And I haven't seen, you know, I don't see that happening either.
Here's the thing, and I don't know how they're going to play under Avram Grant. Under Paul Hart, the fact that they have only 7 points is kind of shocking because there were stretches during that time where they honestly played some pretty damn good football.
They always did. They always barely lost their game.
And they could not score at all. And I think that if that changes... No, it isn't.
I mean, there are some important.
It wasn't that they weren't creating chances, that they couldn't put them away, and it's possible that a change in management and a change in philosophy and just a little bit of luck could turn things so that they believe and they could start putting them in the net. I mean, that's kind of like how Burnley scores, is just sort of like random bullshit luck. And Portsmouth needs to get that random soccer bullshit luck to go their way. And, I mean, it's not actual luck. I mean, you create it, but you just have to create chances, and eventually you'll start putting them away.
Fair enough.
Absolutely.
I mean, you won't put them away regularly, but you'll put them away enough to get, like, 5 more wins for the rest of the season. I mean, that's kind of like, you know, 6, 7 more wins. How many wins does Portsmouth need to stay up?
19.
I mean...
They would stay up if they won 19.
No, they would easily, yes, that's true.
But it's just there are 19 games left here. Oh, wait, yes, there are. There are well more than 18. What am I thinking?
So if they got the traditional 40 points for safety, that's 13 wins and, like, a couple
of
draws.
Or it could be 40 draws.
Could be 40 draws.
They're already incapable of achieving 40 draws. In fact, when the season
started, so that's one avenue. We've already closed out one avenue of escape. And I mean, and to be honest, they've lost 3 games in a row. They've won twice in their last, you know, 6 or sorry, their last 8.
Yeah.
You know, yes, they can, but as of right now, I'm going to have to see an improvement before I acknowledge that they could, you know.
I mean,
that's like saying that I could totally see Wolverhampton going on a run and surviving if they, you know, got
scoring goals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's like they'd start winning if they started scoring. No, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
No, I totally understand.
Just, at the end of the day, Portsmouth has a negative 12 goal differential, you know. They've given up. That's not good.
But the 23 goals that they've given up is actually not that bad by comparison.
But
that's the 12th. Most goals given up in the league.
I'm sure that they're going to get orange slices after the game, and I'm sure that it's really good that they've all tried so very, very hard, but they've scored 11 goals.
You know, I remember reading once that goals scored was a better indicator. It was, like, the best indicator of, like, how good a team actually was.
They're worst in the league.
And they're worst in the league. Stoke and Birmingham are terrible.
So then that's our bottom three. We're gonna go ahead and say, and I may be speaking out of turn, so please correct me, but the official speaking English bottom three is going to be Portsmouth, let's call it
Birmingham
City,
and
Wolverhampton. Portsmouth, yeah. Wolverhampton, and Birmingham.
All right, I like it. I don't actually think, for the record, I'm going to disagree with the official speaking English decision on this one, because I actually think that Alex McLeish is a great manager, and I don't think he's going to let Birmingham go down.
Hey,
they can't score
any goals.
Yeah,
he can't.
But they're not giving up many goals either.
You can't.
They've given up the third fewest goals in the league.
Zion says they're going down.
The team that gets the most goals will win.
All right, well, join us next time on Speaking English to find out if our predictions are accurate. We're going to see how each of those teams does in this weekend's matchups.
announced it like this is going to be the last speaking English until the end of the season.
Well, I feel like
you never know. The rate we've been going right now, it's entirely
possible.
Hey, this
is 2 weeks in a row for Carl and I.
All right. We're
we skipped Thanksgiving.
Well, Thanksgiving doesn't count.
Yeah, you're right. Two normal weeks in a row.
Yeah.
All right. We will be back. We will be tracking the progress throughout the season of Portsmouth, Birmingham, and wait, what was the other one? Oh,
and
Wolves.
Wolverhampton. The SE bottom three.
The total. I mean, that's the inarguable one. Everyone agrees the consensus.
it's SE bottom three. I feel like we've got a slogan now.
All right.
Yes.
Get your SE bottom three merchandise by emailing English.
Let's close out our soccer discussions in the future with a recap of the SE bottom three. We want to keep our listener informed as to how these teams are doing. And at the end of the season, we'll see who was right.
Or should we? Or should we just everyone predicts a new bottom three at the end of each podcast and then try and remember who people had picked before and try and argue with them but not really have a record of it?
We got to stick with the SE bottom three.
So we're always going to watch Birmingham, Wolverhampton, and
Portsmouth.
Okay, fine. We're going to.
I want to see how good we can do at the end of the season. If Portsmouth does like you expect and goes on a run and finishes like 10th, we're going to look like idiots.
No, we won't because no one watches or listens to this.
Well, Ken will.
Ken will know.
Ken already knows we're idiots. Come on.
That is true. Just for that, I'm going to double-decker Ken's bathroom.
All right. I've got some saran wrap if you need to borrow some.
Nice.
All right, folks. Let's
play us out, Jellycat.
Same time, same place next week.
You didn't use your catchphrase, Drew.
Wait, what's my catchphrase?
Holy wow.
Holy wow!